I'm John Batzer. This is Friends of History Debating Society welcoming Pacific Watch on the road with Jeff Bliss. When last we left our hero, he was passing through Portland to Cannon Beach on the coast of Oregon, enjoying himself but reflecting upon the city of Portland. And what I learned from Jeff in the most recent episode is that Portland is on hard times. Now, coming from Manhattan, I understand that cities have ebbs and flows. However, Jeff, a very good evening to you. Your reflections now that you've left Portland, you've left Oregon, you're in Reno, and we will speak of Reno, Nevada soon enough. But what is Portland's challenge these days from your measure, and can it be reversed? Good evening to you, Jeff.
Good evening, John. I'm always a person who's an optimist when it comes to, you know, the idea of redemption for cities or institutions. But it just keeps, it seems that Portland keeps committing the same errors over and over again, namely its leaders do. That has really caught the attention of the residents there who see this happening again and again. It's a population that is largely, hugely liberal and is really pushed into many of their policies by their views on being compassionate. Unfortunately, that has not translated into the situation being better, not just for the homeless in the area and people dealing with substance abuse and mental illness, but also the residents and the commercial prospects there. It's really a city in decline, which is a shame because for those people who have not been to Portland, it is truly one of America's great cities. It sits on the Willamette River. It's right near where the Columbia River joins. So much history there. So much culture. They've got great sports teams. The outdoors is, you know, beyond description. It's so beautiful. You're close to the coast and, you know, you're nearby Canada and the rest of the West Coast. So it's just in a prime spot. Unfortunately, it's let things get away from it. And somebody asked me, you know, to describe Portland for them. It was somebody who lived in Portland. And I said, I think the city is broken and I think it's badly broken. I think there is a possibility it can be repaired. I don't have that solution or couldn't even begin to fathom what it is because the problems are so big. But they're not even attempting anything other than just kind of moving their problems somewhere else.
You describe a landscape that is difficult to imagine in scale. What I've seen are photographs that you sent. The tents look to be mail order tents. The tents are arrayed under overpasses or in empty fields. But in one photograph you sent me, the tents were right along a broad sidewalk of what looked to be downtown Portland, so that pedestrians would have to weave their way through the tents. Now I can see, no, I can't see any of it, but I can imagine underpasses. There's not a lot of traffic there. I mean, there's not a lot of pedestrian traffic. Empty fields, I understand that. But why on the sidewalk, Jeff? Why allow the homeless, who are deeply troubled people, to park themselves in the middle of the daily pedestrian traffic?
That's exactly it. They've allowed it. And it's hard to understand why they have allowed it. They, of course, have moved into park areas that were once key recreation spots, places for families to go to rest and play. And they've really kind of taken them over. And I was even speaking with some people about that. And they said, you know, you walk out there and you're going to find needles. It's not a safe place to be. And you find them, as you pointed out, in these underpasses and along areas that you normally would see homeless. But it's so much more than that. It's in front of businesses. It's in front of residences. It's amazing that when you look at some of the buildings downtown there in Portland, beautiful buildings. I mean, the architecture is fantastic, not just the old stuff that's been there for, you know, a century or more, but also the new architecture that either, you know, imitates what was there before or has new versions of architecture. And it's just striking, so beautiful. And the river nearby, it's gorgeous, but plopped right in front, right near the entrances, right near driveways, right all along the front of these buildings are these tents and sleeping bags. And now what's worse is they've moved to build their own homes. They're building huts. They're building structures. And we had one person point this out to us, said, look, I really started getting worried when they brought in plywood and 2x4s, because that wasn't just about a temporary fix for things. That's about a long-term living arrangement. And that does not make a lot of people in Portland happy.
A positive note. Pacific Watch tells me when he's on the road, he especially pays attention to world-famous donuts. And I believe you told me there are world-famous donuts still in Portland that you can find. So where are they, Jeff?
There's a small chain, very famous, called Voodoo Donuts. And they're famous because some of their donuts have funny shapes or interesting fillings in them, whether it's, you know, chili peppers or a design of a voodoo doll with, you know, jelly in it. It's supposed to be blood. They're actually very comical. Some of them are very risque. I couldn't describe them here. But it's become an institution in Portland, and it's actually spread out to other areas. You'll even find it in Universal Studios, Universal City in L.A., and Universal Studios in Hollywood. So they've really kind of started to branch out. But it's a place where sometimes people are willing to wait 2 or 3 hours to get these very unique donuts, which I will say are among the very best ever in my life that I've tasted. They're fantastic. But it's a fun place to go, and the atmosphere is fantastic, and you feel part of the tradition when you go there.
When you were at Voodoo Donuts, did you see the mayor? And I understand the mayor's in some trouble because he hangs out with his friends while there's trouble in the city.
Did not see the mayor there. I've got a feeling, considering the feeling about him in the town, he's not going to be seen in places like Voodoo Donuts or some of the more popular clubs around there. There's a lot of anger, a lot of upset, and even unrest when it comes to Ted Wheeler, the mayor. Of course, a lot of people were very unhappy with the way he handled the 90-plus nights of rioting in Portland this past year. And they're very upset over the fact that recently, with the heat wave that came through there, an extreme heat wave, it killed about almost 100 people. But he was nowhere to be seen. He didn't make any comment that anybody could point to for me. He didn't make any appearances. It didn't appear. He didn't seem to come out of the woodwork and say, hey, you need to get to these cooling centers. He was not to be found anywhere. And yet his picture came out on the internet, you know, on Instagram or what have you. It was viral, showing him at a park or at a restaurant, smiling, having a great time during all this. So that was one of those things that really got the progressives in the city upset. You know, on one side, you have the conservatives very upset about the riots. On the other side, you have the progressives who were very upset with seeing callousness about the heat wave and the people who are dying, the way the homeless are treated or not being treated. So there's a lot of anger about Ted Wheeler in Portland. And as you go to different parts of the city, you see signs up that say, you know, recall Wheeler. And it's a growing movement. It's called Total Recall PDX. They have some other ideas in mind, but Wheeler's the main focus.
Recall takes me to California. And when you were Pacific Watch, when you were last in California, our hero, the Governor Newsom, was facing a recall in the middle of September. At the same time, we're getting incomplete but highly suggestive recommendations from the CDC to remask and reestablish social distancing and even extend to masking for school children, talking about vaccinations not being adequate for the Delta variant. I don't believe Governor Newsom has commented on this yet, and we can expect that he will be, because California has been adamant about its prevention services for the virus. But this strikes me as coming at the wrong time for Governor Newsom.
This is very bad timing for him. If he honestly feels he needs to do this, he's doing it with a lot of regret, and, you know, he's slow walking it because he knows this is already impacting his numbers. As he starts to lay down the law for state workers, healthcare workers, the state universities, you're starting to see the numbers drop back down in terms of favorability, because as we came out of the masks and as they started doling out money for this project or that giveaway, his numbers really climbed. And people automatically thought there's no way in heck he'll be recalled. But now the tables have turned. Now, with everything seeming to be pointing back to another lockdown or certain more restrictive, people are starting to say, wait a minute, maybe we need to relook at this. In addition, the governor's family was, some members of his family were photographed at a recent outing. They did not have their masks on, so people were saying, oh, here we go again with French laundry. There's a whole list of things where people are saying, wait a minute, you know, different people's businesses, including yours, got to stay open. Mine had to close. It doesn't seem fair. So all of these things are coming together at once. It's a perfect storm for him, or not one that he doesn't want. It's all happening at once, and now it's being accelerated by the new pressure for lockdown.
Finally, Pacific Watch on the road to Reno, Nevada. What I know about Reno is the 1939 spectacular movie with Joan Crawford, Norma Shearer, and Rosalind Russell, The Women, Because in 1939, the law in the United States about divorce was unusual. And as what I understand, you needed to take a train to Reno, where there was a big stop on the Trans-Pacific Railroad, and spend 2 weeks or a month in Reno to file for divorce. That's what I know about Reno. Is there still a divorce market in Reno? Can you hear the whistle blowing?
Not as much as there used to be. You know, probably more along the lines of people coming here, like Las Vegas, to get married. Yeah, they can get the quickie divorces here. But in so many of the states, they now have no-fault divorce. They didn't have it back then when they made the movie. But people still associate Reno with that idea of, you know, the quickie divorce, breaking it up, getting rid of it. And it's interesting because there's a river that flows through the middle of the town, the Truckee River. It's a major river. And there's a bridge that goes over it. And the myth was, or the story goes, that when you get divorced, you walk from the courthouse, you stand on the bridge, and you throw your ring in the Truckee River. And that became so much of an urban legend or a truth that, you know, it was used in the 1961 movie The Misfits with Clark Gable and Marilyn Monroe, where after she's divorced, she goes to the bridge and she throws her ring in it. So that's still part of the lore here. It's part of the history. There are signs up about it. People still joke about it. But Reno's a very interesting town now. You know, it's something that a few settlers came to in the 1850s, you know, after the Native Americans had been here for a long time. And it grew very slowly. It was called the biggest little city in the world. It's still kind of small. It's only about 250,000, 260,000 people. And most of it's devoted to gambling and leisure and recreation. But a number of businesses and people have moved here from California and other states trying to escape taxes and regulation. And Reno and Nevada are starting to benefit from it greatly. And the universities in this area are quite good. People are pretty excited about the inflow of immigrants from other states. It's really making a positive impact.
Do you see divers and scuba equipment out there in the Truckee River, Jeff? Are they?
I have never seen that, but I've heard there have been people down there with gold pans and nets trying to get some of these rings out. I don't think they're doing that anymore. I know there are some pawn shops nearby, so they probably go there for the quick cash, but I remember the first time I visited Reno as a small kid going to that bridge, and my parents laughed as they told that story. And sure enough, other people talk about it all the time. It is part of the lore and legend.
Jeff Bliss is Pacific Watch. I'm John Batchelor. This is Friends of History Debating Society.